Captain's log, stardate 48632.4. The Apocalypse of Geek Trek cast is about to complete the first leg of its 178-part journey, and it is with great reluctance that I turn over the duties of Captain, albeit temporarily, to Ensign Michael, as he prepares for his first assignment as host of the podcast. I can only hope that he does not emulate the command style of William T. Riker, lest we crash the show into a barren planet.
In the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movieless wasteland. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
Is a corridor to another world, a nexus where time and space collide, past and future connect, and two generations will meet to join forces in a battle to save the universe.
I take it the odds are against us and the situation is grim.
You could say that.
Sounds like fun.
Warp one, engage!
Let's go!
Target their bridge!
Fool disruptors!
Make it quick!
Star Trek Generations.
Hello and welcome to the Apocalypse Video Trekcast. I am your captain today, Mike, and joining me with us is Jackie.
Oh, fuck, I was trying to find a quote. I do not understand fun. That's Data.
Thank you, Jackie.
Yeah.
And formerly captain, now demoted disgracefully to a mere ensign. Dave.
I would like to point out that I was not demoted. This is all part of your training exercise, so to speak.
I'm just trying to get into character, Dave.
You are now acting captain. And also, I'd like to point out, you're already starting to fail this test. A captain is supposed to, you know, exude command and presence. You are sounding more like the movie phone guy.
Sometimes that's what a Kirk impression sounds like.
Well, you know, I think that's fitting for the movie that we're talking about today. The movie we're talking about did not exactly exude confidence.
In any sense.
But it was, we'll get into it. It was, there's going to be some stuff to talk about. I had a fun time. And we are, of course, talking about Star Trek Generations.
What? Two captains.
Two captains.
One destiny.
One Malcolm.
It's real to say two captains is like already just really overselling what happens, because Kirk is here for fully like 7 minutes
in the beginning
of this
and
film.
The end. Yeah.
Getting in the end in a hallucination dream sequence.
And then he, spoiler alert.
He chops wood.
He chops wood. That's the spoiler. And we'll leave it there.
That is not a euphemism.
Beautiful day.
He makes, he fucks up eggs.
Yeah, he burns some weird alien eggs, and that's all. And that's what the movie's about.
You know, it's interesting. I'm sure we will drop several bits of trivia throughout this movie, because I feel like the trivia in this movie, the bulk of it, has an interesting theme. And the first part of it is, it's interesting, the script, the people who are working on the script were working off of ideas that Gene Roddenberry, for the longest time while he was alive, he died a couple years prior to this.
This sounds like some late era Gene
put the
ideas.
Kaput on. There were some ideas in this movie that he put the kaput on, and number one was Kirk and Picard should not meet.
Because it's, why would they?
It doesn't make sense.
Oh, so Gene's decree was that they should not meet?
That was one of several, yes.
Oh, okay.
And that
well,
was
I take
a reasonable
back my
decree. This is like, I feel like, well, I mean, we'll get into it, but Generations overall just feels like the personification of like the stupid ass nerd argument of like, who's better, Kirk or Picard? And it's like, they're two different shows and series. So I don't, they're meeting up? Okay.
Well,
sure.
Of course.
You know what it is? It's as Spock puts it in the season 4, I believe, Unification episode, cowboy diplomacy versus Picard's actual diplomacy.
Although I don't know how much actual diplomacy we see from Picard in this. So.
No, because we're in the Next Generation movies in which Picard is Mr. Action Star and not
we don't
the
get
diplomat.
A lot of. Well, okay, so we watched.
Let's get into it.
We watched this movie because, of course, as loyal fans of the show will know, we finished our trek through the generations, if you pardon the pun.
Our first leg.
Yes. Our first leg. We're going to go around for several laps, of course.
We have many legs.
Famously, we're listening to one episode or watching one episode per season through all 7 wonderful seasons of Star Trek The Next Generation. And as a little pit stop, if you will, before we take another trip around the seasons, well, we thought let's watch one of the movies from this season, I guess. So this movie was the first movie released after the show had ended. And it was the first Next Generation movie a couple years after Star Trek VI, which was the last original cast movie.
This one came out in 94.
And I think Star Trek VI was 91, something like that.
Something like that.
Yep.
So this is, you know, we're alluding to this. This is like the attempt, I guess. Maybe the original intent here was, hey, let's sort of pass the torch to the Next Generation cast. But it feels weird that like this is coming after the whole 7
the
seasons.
The show's
ended.
Yeah, been on for many years. That torch was passed.
Yeah, the torch was like firmly passed. This is something that feels like should have been, if they were going to do this, should have been done like before the Next Generation show started.
But that would have been, I feel like, even weaker, because it would have been seen as a like, here's the, oh, you guys remember Star Trek? Oh, here we're doing some of the same. And that, I mean, that's the reason why season 1 Next Generation is so all over the place, but mostly weak, because there's a lot of kind of moments and elements of them being like, yeah, kind of like TOS, right? Huh? Right? Right.
Yeah, it would have been a bad timing to do this move prior to season 3 or 4, because by that point of the show, Next Generation had, right, I think, firmly established its characters and all that stuff. If they had done this during season 1 and season 2, I don't think we would have maybe seen more Star Trek. It certainly wouldn't have been like passing the torch. It would have been like, oh geez, like this crew they're not up to the task, man.
Prop them up.
They're not movie ready.
Yeah.
So I did see that one of the original ideas for this that eventually was vetoed is that Picard and Kirk would have a fight to the death. That really seems to me like an idea that's not for a story, but for like a scene, and then they're like working their back way backwards to figure out how would this make sense.
Yeah,
you know what that reminds me of?
And the answer is it doesn't make sense.
That reminds me a lot. To me, that's a fan thing. That is basically, that's the moment in Rogue One when Darth Vader shows up at the end and starts killing a bunch of people.
Yeah.
It's just like a fangasm moment.
Yeah, it's just jerking off.
What if we had Captain Picard and Captain Kirk and they fought to the death?
Why? Why would they do that? Why would either of those characters do that? You claim to like this series. This is me talking to the straw man nerd.
Honestly, I think the best moment, the best little moment that we have with Kirk and Picard in this movie is when they're both just talking about the job at the end. When they're just being people. He's like,
I think
Captain, huh? What's your close to retirement? He's like, don't, man. Don't let him put you in an office or something like that. You know, like that's the best little isolated moment between them in this movie, I think.
Captain of the Enterprise.
That's right.
Close to retirement?
I'm not planning on it.
Let me tell you something. Don't let them promote you. Don't let them transfer you. Don't let them do anything that takes you off the bridge of that ship, because while you're there, you can make a difference.
Come back with me. Help me stop Sodom. Make a difference again.
Who am I to argue with the captain of the Enterprise? What's the name of that planet? Viridian 3?
Yes.
I take it the odds are against us and the situation is grim.
You could say that.
You know, if Spock were here, he'd say that I was an irrational, illogical human being for taking on a mission like that. Sounds like fun.
I like my favorite part by far of this whole movie, and the part where really the only part that felt kind of like Star Trek to me was the stuff in the Nexus, where they're like kind of hanging out and like it feels very much like, oh, what's going on this weird space thing, and like Picard and Kirk are interacting in a way that felt like it's a crazy space thing. Like they're seeing like his dead wife and stuff like that. Like it's all kind of like time nonsense. And it made, I would have liked if this movie had been very different, but like you had only seen,
I would have liked it if this movie was something else.
Very different.
But imagine if you only saw Kirk in the Nexus and it was just like Picard is like,
oh, there's no opening of like,
yeah, and like he's dead. Yeah. But Picard is in the Nexus, like, and it's like time doesn't make any sense, and like he's just in the Nexus. Like that would have been, I think, a cool, tasteful moment, similar to like Nimoy in the Star Trek 2009 remake, where you kind of see him for a little bit. Gets in, gets out.
I'm now picturing the like, if this were made in like 2010s with like the kind of CGI of
be even darker.
Well, no, I'm picturing like the extremely tasteless, just like heartless. Like here we've got CGI'd young Kirk, and that would be so fucking hideous, and it would still get like the biggest jerk off in the world from whatever to be like, let the technology on display where they've gotten, it's like for what end, to what end, what purpose does this serve, this terrifying corpse you're walking around? Anyway, should we get into plot?
Real quick before we get into the plot, I just want to point out, this is Jackie, Mike, this is your first voyage with Star Trek Generations, isn't it?
Yeah, what's your history? I mean, this is
I realized when we were watching it that I have seen it before, but it was kind of like half paying attention like years and years ago. The Kirk bits, I definitely remembered when he shows up chopping wood. I'm like, oh, there he is. He's chopping wood.
I remember Kirk chopping
wood. I remember that guy. He chops wood. He burns eggs.
I actually saw this in the theater when it came out.
Oh, wow. Shit.
And there's a moment that happens pretty much like the big showstopper of the movie towards the end, towards the end of the second act, that as a kid, I was like, as a kid and watching it as someone who was experiencing, you know, CGI with everyone else for the first time, I was like, whoa, that's totally cool.
I love
this,
that.
However,
can I guess this is 1994. This one the ship of Crash Lands?
It is.
And that's
as a kid,
big,
I thought it was amazing.
I'm just imagining you as a kid, like, yeah, gripping the shoulders of your, like, the armrest, like, whoa!
Oh, I was just like, yeah, I was dumb on the ship. I was gripping my armrest. I had my little box lamp out, you know, the box flashlight that they use for some reason, the cube flashlight. The
weird little cube shit.
Would you have probably had one of those boxes at the movie theater that they give to kids where it's like
a little popcorn, a little candy, a little soda?
I don't know if those were a little too expensive. I think my parents are like, we will get one popcorn
and
share.
Those were always upcharged.
Concessions are expensive.
A little bougie for my taste.
We would have been seeing a premium movie in a first run theater. So, you know, we gotta
spark
your battles. Yeah.
But watching this scene now, to me, it is like a big sequence, but I have different feelings about that scene now.
Sure.
Well, I can't wait to get into them.
That's enough Nexus reminiscing. Mike, why don't you tell us the plot of Star Trek Generations?
Well, it's a pretty simple we've all heard this story before.
Tale as old as time.
We open on space.
We open on champagne.
Well, yeah, that's what I was getting.
In space!
So we open on space and we see something floating. And what is that? It is a fine vintage of champagne from like. 20...
Oh wait, I want to look it up because it's oh my gosh,
is it some like reference like Chateau Picard or something like that?
Well, it's Dom Perignon vintage 2265. Oh, great
good
year.
Is it the just grapes. Dom Perignon? Yeah. Like the actual? Is this product placement like immediately?
I mean
that's a real brand.
I know it, and it's yeah. They need to illustrate
that would probably
the
be like, then that would make it like the first product placement in Star Trek, really, or among the first, because it's like in Star Trek, it's not like you see Coke cans anymore.
I was going to say, what if it's this shot and the bottle, eventually you see the label and it's Coca-Cola Vintage 23. And they're just smashing a glass bottle of Coke onto
the
Enterprise.
So yeah, we see the bottle smash against the deck of the Enterprise.
You know, that thing you do to Christian... starships.
Yeah, you slowly release a bottle into space and watch it lazily drift. It takes
you
like several hours to smash against the ship. So it's the new Enterprise, but we're still in old times. This is the original crew, not all the original crew. They didn't all show up.
We got Kirk
and Geordi.
Not Geordi.
Scotty.
All right, Mike, you are now getting a red mark on your test.
Oh, good.
Dave furiously scribbling notes.
Where's my apple? I need to eat an apple. Smarmily.
Yeah.
So it's Scotty.
It's Scotty, Chekov, and Kirk.
Chekov and Kirk, yeah. All the boys. except for...
You know, all those other boys.
Except for Spock and Bones.
And Uhura and... Anyway. And Sulu.
Yeah. So they're there with Cameron from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yes, Captain Cameron Ferris Bueller.
Captain Kirk, what do I do?
Yeah, so basically they like
he's,
go
he's
to take
he's perfect for the role though because he's got his big sad eyes. It's a very short part, but dang it, he delivers.
So this new Enterprise takes its maiden voyage. This is sort of like a test run. Like the press is there.
the pushy press with their flashlights and et cetera.
And basically Kirk and crew are there as just like PR to like, hey, yeah, it's a new Enterprise. And he ceremonially gives the order to leave the station. Like he says, like, take her out.
Engage. No. that's for Picard.
Yes. That was kind of a funny line.
Like,
that was kind of like a funny meta bit where it kind of feels like, it's kind of like a commentary on just like, say the line.
Oh, thank you very much. Please, sir, No, no. Please, I insist. Take us out. Wedding, good sir.
Brought a tear to my eye.
I'll be quiet.
Whoa! There's, yeah, a lot of moments there of like, so how does it feel to be fucking old, huh? Oh, yeah, we read about your guys' exploits back when I was, like, shitting my pants in grade school.
In grade school, yeah.
Yeah, and it kind of reminds me.
He
could have
said, like, I was shitting my pants in Starfleet Academy. That would have been funny, though.
I kind of like this as, like,
I shit my pants a lot there.
A start to a movie that was featuring these characters. It's not bad. Like, it definitely is really more so than any of the other Star Treks leaning into them being, like, past their prime and dealing
well,
with that.
I feel like that's the theme of most of the TOS movies.
True. That's even like a theme in two.
That's literally how two starts of saying like, Jim, you gotta have your reading glasses now. You're getting old. You're not the young man you used to be. But
so basically
because that
been,
is
well, been that, old that's and Kirk's over the hill and, for like 10 years.
Yeah, what am I saying? Yeah.
That is Kirk's and Shatner's, I guess, ongoing weak point of like, hey, you know how time moves forward and you're fucking old? Yeah.
You know how you used to be devastatingly handsome?
Remember how hot you used to be? How fun that was? No, that's over now.
You used
Remember
to be
how
able
you used
to, wear
to have a barrel chest, yeah, and now you just have a barrel gut.
Remember all that big dick swagger? Anyway, see ya.
No one looked better in eyeliner.
So, but yeah, all the old man swagger can't save the ship from all the shit that goes down.
Yeah, so basically they leave the port with like a skeleton array of equipment because they're not really intending to do anything. And they immediately encounter like a tear in the fabric of space and time.
Yeah.
They
have to like evacuate, yeah, some people from ships.
And Cameron is like, he's like chicken and he's a wuss and doesn't want to do anything. He's like, oh, I don't think we
I
should
don't
rescue
know about
him.
That. Blah, blah,
blah. And Kirk is like, you fool. We go towards
you're
the
our captain.
You are a captain.
Well, he
of the
it's interesting. He bites his tongue. He doesn't say anything. He just sort of gives Cameron moves. Like Cameron has this thing like, what if we like use the deflector or do this or that? And he looks over to Kirk for approval and Kirk just sort of slowly shakes
yeah.
his head. Like,
I kind of like this dude. Bit. And I think William Shatner plays this scene. Well, Cameron and Shatner both play this scene well, I think. Those are fun performances. Like,
yeah.
So far, I'm not totally off board with the movie, I'll say.
Yeah, yeah, no.
Honestly, I like this opening scene. I it's a fun Star Trek-y thing, you know? Mm-hmm. Like,
it is,
as usual, they're the only ship in the quadrant, even though, stupidly, they just left Earth.
Yeah. Oh, there's no one else around. I guess it's gotta be us. Sure, sure.
Whatever.
Everyone's at Starfleet Rumspringer or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's spring break. Campus was empty. It just is such a ghost town. You know how that goes. Anyway.
Everyone's partying on Risa 5 or whatever yeah. that pleasure planet is. Or maybe this was, because this is a little bit in the future from original series. Maybe the holodeck has just been invented, and right now, like, everybody's like
everyone's in the holodeck, jizzing their brains out.
This is like the beginning of the 30-year timeline, my timeline in my head, where everyone's in the holodeck and they don't want to leave. and starships are in Earth. They're just not in service because everyone's in the holodeck.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
And it took 30 years for them to put in the safeguards in the holodeck to prevent some of the craziness.
Too many people, yeah, just died in the holodecks because of lack of fluids. Like, they didn't eat or drink water or anything. They were just fucking constantly.
That's why the Federation of Next Generation is more utopian
exactly.
than original series, because they found that the only way to coax people to come out of the holodeck was to make society finally improve society for the better.
Yeah. Anyway, then that big old, there's a temporal flux. You know how that goes. They're always here
and,
fucking
and
shit
we,
up.
And we rescue some people who are trapped in the ship, one of whom is a Malcolm McDowell, who's like very and Guinan. I don't want to gloss over
Guinan
that.
Guinan is also there.
Guinan and Malcolm McDowell are both rescued from the ship that's stuck in the temporal thing. And curiously, Malcolm McDowell is like, take me back! Take me back! I want to go back!
Why? Why?
It's all right. You're safe. You're on the Enterprise.
No, I have to go. I have to go
back. You need
back.
To stay right here.
No, okay, go. You don't understand. Let me go back. Let me go back. Let me go back. Let me go back. Please.
What was he talking about?
I have no idea.
I'm going to mention this more than once, but why is Malcolm McDowell styled like Sting?
It was 1994.
And that's just what they were like, he's got to look like. I mean, he looks hot. Like, he definitely does. But and the whole time, I was just like, did Sting, like, do something, like, before this came out where they were like, he's the sex symbol. We got to style our
song,
villain after.
Had just come out that was like, in way, yeah, yeah.
It's probably. I'm sure
you
they
know
wanted.
What song I'm talking about, right?
No, I don't. I'm sure they wanted Malcolm McDowell to sing that.
You know, as you guys are talking about Malcolm McDowell being like Sting and like sexy, like he did look good in those super tight like black pants
he was working.
What was he wearing? Were they like yoga pants? Like they weren't pants. They were like
they were
again,
Sting's pants.
It's Sting, yeah. Sting, they're like, they I don't know, what would you wear here, Sting, in the future?
He
He's
was
like
in good shape.
This and this.
The cut of like, those pants is Sting.
Like, this is actually, I think, our second Malcolm McDowell movie that we've reviewed on the show, the first being 1982's Cab People. And
funny.
I got to admit, you know, this is, I think, 12 years after he would have made Cab People. And I think he looks better in this than he did in Cab People.
He's looking like a snack here.
He is.
Not ever. I mean, as with, you know, Sting, not everyone can pull off that you know, spiky, like, bleachy white hairdo and... You know, Malcolm McDowell got those baby blues. He's working them. Anyway,
So Mike, explain to me how Captain Cameron is going to get the crew of the Enterprise B out of this mess.
Eventually he just lets Kirk take over, right? Like that.
He gives the reins to somebody
else.
He gets
big scared, yeah. He turns his big sad eyes over to Kirk and is like,
where is my friend Ferris to get me out of this jam?
Ferris!
Sir, the LaCool's hull integrity is down to 12%.
Captain Kirk. I would appreciate any suggestions you might have.
First, move us within transporter range. Beam those people aboard the Enterprise.
What about the gravimetric distortions? They'll tear us apart.
Risk is part of the game. You want to sit in that chair?
Captain Kirk, you're my hero.
He just lays in bed and he says, let my Captain Cameron go.
Well, let's let Scotty explain how he's going to get us out of this situation.
Captain, it may be possible to simulate a torpedo blast using a resonance burst from the main deflector dish.
Okay. See, here's something I like that this opening scene does. You know, I don't know if I've brought this up on the other Trekcast episodes or not, but one thing I've always been sort of fascinated with is the deflector dish on the Enterprise, on all the Enterprises. Like in the original ones, it actually looks like an actual dish. Mm-hmm. I think it had like a little spike in the middle, and it sort of evolved as the series goes on to the point where we are now at this movie with the Enterprise D, and it's like this bluey thing. It has like blue rings, and I've always been kind of fascinated with it because I'm always just, they sometimes use it in the show, and it shoots out what looks like kind of a laser beam looking thing. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know what it is? I think it's kind of going back to me as a kid, like loving the design of the Enterprise and lasers and stuff. And like, I always felt like they never used the deflector dish enough. You know what I mean? Like this big old laser beam that comes out at the bottom of the ship. And they use it here to, as Scotty says, like replicate a torpedo blast or something to get them free of the Nexus. And I don't know. This is a really nerdy thing to point out, but I just like it when they use the deflector dish to do things because it just seems like it's always just there and it's always just like, you know, like if you're someone who's never seen Star Trek and you're looking at the Enterprise, I feel like the deflector dish is almost like a target. It almost might be like the thing your eye is drawn to because it's just right there in the center with these blue rings. And you're like, what do those do? Anyway, I'm pushing our lasers up my nerd glasses. I'm pushing my nerd glasses up. I will sit back in my chair and we can resume the synopsis.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Thanks for that, Dave. this is why we'll peek behind the curtain on why someone's an ensign now.
Nerd! My crew is mutinying!
We can't have a nerdy captain. So
I need to have a big, buff, tough guy captain who does action.
And we get a big, I don't know about buff, but we get a big captain who does do some action. He goes heroically down into the...
Kirk does.
Into the... Kirk, the big guy. He
Not
goes
Cameron.
Heroically down into the guts of the ship to, like, do stuff.
Heroic stuff, yeah.
Because, like...
Heroic stuff like switching in and out little chips,
I love that, like... It's like, okay, we need someone who's like the most like agile physical man on this crew.
Probably this older middle-aged man.
Yeah.
No, later age. He is no longer middle-aged. He is
later age.
That's why
I said older middle-aged, you know.
Yeah, he's probably like mid-60s.
On the older,
I think if you look at the actual timeline of Star Trek, I think... If I remember my trivia correctly, the character would be in his 80s.
But also, it is Star Trek times, and humans routinely live to be like 120. So,
all right, so let's
I'm still calling him middle aged.
That's fine. I mean, I'm just saying
he's an old man.
I don't know if there might be better physical specimens there.
They could do this kind
of physical like. Risky labor.
He didn't want to risk any of the young generation. He's already out to pasture. He's got to do the heroic stuff and go out in a blaze of glory.
Well, he gets the job done. And
you know what Kirk was going to say? Like, why not send that Tuvok guy behind the other console? And Cameron's like, no, he's got to live to be in Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah.
that was this guy.
We both did clock him in the camera pan pass. We're like, oh, is that? Oh, that's him.
That's Cameron.
Oh, yeah. No, not Cameron, the Tuvok.
So, basically, they get out of there, but Kirk is presumed dead. And that's kind of where we end that scene.
Ribbon, like, hits the Enterprise.
And then he's gone.
And he's gone.
And then...
cut to what?
So, this has now been, like, 20 minutes, probably, into the movie. 15, 20 minutes. And... You know, just as another example of how, like, great and well put together this movie is, we smash cut to...
78 years later.
Master and Commander.
Yeah, we're doing some holodeck bullshit, baby.
It is the crew of the Next Generation. They are on a sailing vessel in the ocean, and they're about to walk...
They're like Worf. Sending Worf off the plank, but it's also like a promotion, and it's his, you know, how Klingons like to have weird shit go on. So they're like pretending they're gonna, you know, walk him off the plank, but it's actually like, hey, you're a lieutenant commander now.
And this is where things for me started to fall off of the movie.
Wow, already. Cool.
Specifically, We have a bit where like they're walking Worf off the plank and they trick him to like Riker, I think it is.
He's like jump and grab a hat or some shit.
Well, he's like he does it, and then I think it's Riker is like, computer, make the plank disappear, and then he just falls, and everyone's laughing, and Data is like, Beverly, why are they laughing?
Yeah, it's all
it's
the quotes.
Your Data voice sounds like a Picard voice. Why are they laughing?
Why are they laughing?
I feel like it sounds like the kid Picard from Rascals.
Why are they laughing?
Why are they laughing?
Picard. The quote is, it's all in good fun, Data. I do not understand fun.
Yeah,
because apparently fucking Data's been hanging out with his friends and crew for like 15 years and
Data
decided he doesn't remember what fun is.
This is like... red alert for me of like, oh no, this is going to be one of those movies.
That is kind of the moment that the first of many where it's like, okay, so this is a Star Trek movie for people who've seen like maybe an episode of Star Trek or none at all.
Or the people who made this have not seen Star Trek and they're just like, oh, he's an android. He doesn't understand
feelings.
What fun is. He's going to get emotion chips, so he doesn't have emotions. Like, it's just kind of
that's
like,
where I got to stop you, Mike. This was written by writers of the show. In fact, If you look at the trivia, they were writing this movie while they were writing or working on the season finale of Next Gen. And I think one of those is much better than the other. And I think they appeared to put more work into the finale, which rightfully so, than this movie, I gotta say.
Well, that's why this feels like, you know, it's written for an audience, but it's not necessarily the audience that likes the show. It's for the, you know, the big Hollywood's always after when they adapt shit for the big screen. They're like, but what if we could get some fucking rando who's never heard of this? And it's like, why do you want that?
It reminds me of like Democrats trying to get Republicans to vote for their bills.
This time it'll work. And it's like, no, you just made something kind of bad.
Now no one wants this.
Yeah. Now this is for no one. But anyway, yeah, Data then pushes Crusher into the water, which everyone gets upset about, even though it is pretty funny. Like, he pushes her, and when she's falling,
isn't it like slow-mo?
She hits Worf, who had been crawling back out of the water, so they both fall in. Like, that's kind of funny. Everyone's like, Data.
Doctor, I must confess, I am uncertain as to why someone falling into freezing water is amusing.
Oh, it's all in good fun, Data.
Fun?
Fun.
I do not understand.
You've got to get into the spirit of things. Learn to be spontaneous. Live in the moment. Do something unexpected. Get it?
Got it. Data, that was not funny.
I feel like if this had been an episode of the show, they all would have laughed. Like, oh, Data.
Yeah. Oh, Data. But yeah, she would have come up from the water like, ha, ha,
she would have been like, Data. Not like, what? Anyway.
Because you're in the holodeck. It's not like she's going into actual water.
She's
not
going to drown.
And Picard is interrupted with some bad news. We don't know what yet.
Yeah, he goes to check.
Very
some...
grave. And some this news. Is also where some warning signs start to, it's not full red alert for me, but some warning signs that do.
Not yellow alert.
Yellow alert that does eventually become another red alert in this movie, which is the characterization of Picard. He is, in the show, we have talked about how great Picard is. I think you, Dave, have said he's like one of your favorite characters of fiction. And
correct. In the show, I just want to say, in the show, he is.
And he is, you know, let me ask you, Dave, since if you don't mind me putting you on the spot, Ensign Snyder, since you are so fond of Picard, why don't you tell me what you like about Picard? Why is Picard one of your favorite characters in all of fiction?
Jean-Luc Picard. Go.
Well, I think, again, mentioning the season 4 unification episode with Leonard McCoy, I think Spock puts it kind of best about Picard is that he is almost Vulcan-like in his logic and the way he handles himself. He is like the epitome of a good diplomat. You know what I mean? He's always looking at both sides. So, he is human. Sometimes his emotions will get the better of him. But even then, he at least recognizes that in those times he might be in the wrong. He's letting his emotions get the better of him. He is like the opposite of Kirk, I feel. Like, Kirk is impulsive. Picard is very much measured and just, as I said, very much a diplomat. And he's the guy I mentioned, you know, mentioning earlier about being, you know, putting forth like a presence. He understands that the captain has to be above all that shit, and the captain has to represent, you know, he's the face of the ship. He has to represent, he has to exude confidence. And in this movie, he is just like, not to say that, you know, he's a human, not to say that he can't be affected by the death of a family member, but in this movie, he just seems. I don't know. I feel like TV show Picard would just like, rather than be like, oh, Troy, you know, he would just be like sulking sort of like in his ready room. Like, he wouldn't be crying as he looked at the, not to say he can't cry, but again, I just feel like his I don't know. He would be, I feel like he would have handled it a much different way on the show.
I'm not even mad about the family stuff. It's just like, he is a little bit, but he, in this movie, there's like, He's just a cold, stoic badass. That's like his character is what he's meant to be. Like,
I would disagree.
I think he's so angry in it. Like, he's yelling at everybody. He's barking orders. He's just like saying, like, this is what we'll do. We're gonna go there, do this. And
as soon as that is complete, then you can go back on the ship.
I don't love movie Picard characterization because it does always tend to go for like, what if he had a gun and he shot people with it and it was cool. But I will, for how much I think this movie is not very good, and definitely the Picard stuff is uneven, I am not necessarily mad at Picard characterization of, like, in this moment of grief over the course of, like, what, this movie is, like, takes place over, like, a day and a half, that, like, he would be,
That's true.
Up about it. But I think you're right, Dave, about like the scene with Troy when he like breaks down. I think like she would try to come talk to him and he would maybe share some vulnerable stuff, but I feel like it would be a like she then leaves and then he cries kind of thing.
He wouldn't do that in front of her.
Yeah, where he'd still, even at this point of like, you know, seven seasons have passed and he does warm up a lot from where he starts in the show, that like I don't necessarily believe that he would be someone who is willing to show that in front of others.
My biggest problem with this Picard is that there's no scene in this movie that has any sort of like leadership qualities. Like there's no like monologue or moment where he brings really anything to the table in a Picardian way. He just sort of is like, I'm the stoic badass captain guy.
Well, and it also gets into, but doesn't really get into, like one of the major themes of the movie is like, you know, from Picard and from Kirk of the like, you know, what is it take out of you to like have a family or not have a family, or make time for this or not make time for that. And I don't, you know, we'll get into it when we see Picard in the Nexus, but like, he's famously like someone who doesn't really like being around children. And that's something that we see on the show, like, evolve and kind of change in some ways. And he does warm up in a lot of ways, but I don't really believe that that is his, you know, greatest wish deep down of like, if only I had had children.
Not at all. And yeah. I also, like, I feel like TV show Picard would be like, should we destroy the Nexus? Like, what is the Nexus? Does the Nexus have a right to...
He would take, like, 10 minutes of dialogue to quietly be like, well, if this happened, then what about that?
Which is, like, why he's a cool character. And we just don't get any of that. It's like, it's not like he's a... It's not like the character of Picard in this movie on its own is that bad. It's just... He's such a cool character in the show, and we don't get that. And
I think what it is, feel like the writers kind of flinched. I feel like they had a movie, and they're like, this is a movie, so they want to try to, as Jackie put it, like appeal to a bigger audience of people that probably don't watch Star Trek in the first place.
Yeah, or but if I they like know of it, they know some very like vague, broad things about it.
Yeah, I think the mindset was, this is a movie, it's got to be bigger and more action-y. And I think that's the fault of the next-gen movies. It's like, they're movies, they got to be action-y, mm-hmm. or otherwise people aren't going to come in. People aren't going to go to a movie to see heady sci-fi. We tried that with motion picture, and everyone hated it.
Yeah, so. we tried it slow and long and weird, and people said that they didn't like that, even though it's awesome when Star Trek is slow and dumb and weird.
It's kind of, I feel like it's the paradox of Star Trek in the movies. Like, you know, maybe not the paradox. It's, you know, the show is very much its own thing, the earlier iterations, not the later, you know, Discovery iterations. But, you know, the show is allowed to be more character driven and more idea driven, whereas the movies are, for the most part, well, I would say with Next Gen on, like, I think there are exceptions with the original crew movies, but I think what with the original crew movies for the most part nail is the fact that they put a little more action in there, but for the most part they're less idea driven and more character driven. And I think that's where those original crew movies work, is that the characters are good, and I think they stay true to their characters as they were in the show, just aged up. But the Next Gen movies, I think they sacrifice everything that made Next Generation in lieu of action stuff. And like you said, action Picard. And it's just, it doesn't feel
action
true
Picard
to his character.
Action Picard is always cringe. It's just like, no, that's not what this man is about.
Which is why I really, yeah, I have no interest in that Picard show, because it's like going forward. It's basically they took up Next Generation movie Picard and went through there.
Yeah.
It's, as opposed to Next Generation TV show Picard. And it's just, to me, it's just, I don't care about Action Man. You know what I mean? I like Diplomat Man.
I like when he is old coot. Crossing his arms,
really,
he just wants to like go read a book in the library or some shit.
Yeah, Picard is a guy that goes to Risa and reads a book.
And brings a book and is so annoyed
and
when people try to hit on him.
He's accidentally putting the totem in front of his reading chair that means the DTF.
That's why,
exactly.
That's why that's one of my fucking favorite episodes, because he has to be forced onto a vacation and he hates it.
That would have been,
anyway,
what if that was this movie? Just a whole movie of him on vacation.
Weekend at Picard's.
Weekend at Picard's. Oh, don't tease me with what we can never have. Anyway, back on, you know, the show.
All right, the movie.
So Picard is you know, having grief, and Data, because he didn't understand jokes on the boat time, is like, I think it's time for the emotion ship, guys,
and
right?
This is it back in his room.
Yeah.
And this is, I think, where we start to realize... apparently no one paid the electricity bill
all of
for
the lights
Enterprise.
Are
yes!
on dim the entire time. Also importantly, before we get into that, which is I think its own topic, we do get a Spot cameo, the first of several, and that's all I care
one
about.
One thing this movie does get right, the characterization of Spot.
Yes, Spot, yeah. He shows up, he is trying to get a pet, and that's great.
It's like someone whoever was shooting this is like, no, this is a movie, so everything's got to be dim.
It's
this
gotta
was
be
shot
so
by the
bad.
Same guy who shot Chinatown.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So it's like everything, it's almost, I mean, there's one scene where they're in 10 forward and it's like the lighting is basically showing like the sun is coming into the waiting,
yeah.
the you know, I could maybe see that, but
yeah, because you
Data's room specifically is like
is
jarring because
so
it's so dark.
Because
yeah.
Again,
like
you would believe
dark.
That 10 forward the bar would have like some weird lighting choices sometimes,
yeah,
yeah, something like that. But
yeah,
Data,
exactly, yeah.
And again, obviously there's a difference between TV lighting and movie lighting, but I believe Data would be like, the lights are at better. I have found that for my studies, the lights being at 69% nice.
69% nice.
No, he doesn't have the emotion chip yet, so he wouldn't be making 69 jokes. But yeah, he enjoyed your hanging out, and he's like, I believe I would like to learn what fun is.
So dumb.
So we mentioned the characterization of Picard. Let's talk about the characterization of Data.
Oh, poor Data.
And, you know,
my
this
man.
Can all be blamed on his emotion chip. Like, you know, otherwise he acts like he probably normally would. But this emotion chip thing, I feel, is just like an excuse. Like, Brent Spiner is like, I want to do more, even though most of the episodes of Next Generation are about me anyway. But
yeah,
let's,
right.
I want more. So I think it's just... What irks me so much is they take a character which I love, one of my favorite characters from the show, and turn him into this annoying, obnoxious character.
It's cringe.
It sings like this. It's cringe. It's very much cringe. And to me, it sort of feels like, oh, Spiner wants to. He wants more of the spotlight. Let's give him more of the spotlight. It kind of feels like that.
It's another thing
like,
where Data is like such a nuanced character in the show. And this,
oh, it's just so flattened here.
This is like season one Data, where they like don't know what to do with him. And they're like, oh, just the most basic thing you could do of like, he doesn't have emotion. Like, okay,
so he doesn't know what joke is.
He doesn't
is.
Get anything that human, you know, are. And like,
yeah, that's
Data's more interesting when he's like that gray area where he like does get it, but he doesn't get certain things.
That's the
and
thing.
This
like
is
we
not
spent
that.
Seven seasons being able to slowly, you know, have Data, you know, learn this or go through this. And like, even, I mean, it's season two, Measure of a Man. Even then he is like, it's so early, but he's still, we get this like excellent nuanced episode about him being like, well, I want to be alive, and I have had like really like interesting experiences, and like I have friends, and I will argue for the right, for like my right to exist. And here he's just like, joke. And it's, it hurts. It's so weird seeing him laugh, and it's terrifying. And you know, I hope Spiner had fun, but that's not really, that's not what I want.
I think the only saving grace of this whole emotion chip subplot is when he freaks out, the emotion chip like overloads his systems, and his eyes bulge like they would in Total Recall. He just goes, and his eyes bulge out. That's the only
his
saving grace
like
of this
bulging.
Whole subplot.
Yeah, that's kind of
when that happened, that was like a David Cronenberg body horror moment. I was like, whoa!
Like, yeah, let's get cool. into some of that then. But yeah, that's Data's subplot the whole time.
And
it's just kind of a bummer.
Later when shit goes down and he starts to question, like, oh, I can't be on the bridge. I'm too scared. I can't handle these
and
emotions.
Then, yeah, there's
until
like...
Until movie Picard's like, shut up!
Shut up,
like,
Data!
Just and man up, damn it!
Yeah, shut up, be a man! Be on the bridge!
And there is like... some made up reason for why they can't take the emotion chip out for X, Y, and Z reason.
Picard, like, straight up in this one, like, his conflict resolution in this is like, Data, you have to learn to bury your emotions like a man.
I would argue against that, but, yeah. Then
enter
we...
Sauron.
Oh, that snack.
So, yeah, Sauron is,
he's a snack.
Sauron, the evil eye, whatever, made the one ring.
Yeah, he did that.
I love, he's like, what's a good name for our bad guy? Sauron.
Sauron?
Yeah.
Sauron?
Sure.
Sorry, I was reading the Lord of the Rings.
Is the villain in the next movie Voldemort?
So we find him on this space station, and apparently the Romulans attacked. Looking for, I don't think they find this out immediately, but they were looking for this element, trilithium, that Sauron, we find out, is using to build this weapon that'll basically blow. It's like a rocket. This is funny. It basically
it's a Wile E. Coyote
like
rocket.
Yeah. It's a Wile E. Coyote rocket.
He ordered it from Acme.
To destroy a star, which will alter the trajectory of the Nexus and allow it to fly through this planet where he's on.
And this rocket that's going to destroy the star is like a cartoon, like 10-foot long rocket.
Yeah. It's very silly.
That's like it's literally just like pointed at the star.
Point up.
Point
yeah.
up.
And he...
it just, it's, yeah, it's ridiculous. And that's his whole goal in this movie. I want to be happy and do fantasy stuff in the Nexus. It's like, did no one tell him about the holodeck?
Oh, right? So at
Dude,
some point, they do explain what
holodeck.
The Nexus is. I think we glossed over that. The Nexus is, oh, Guinan explains it.
Yes.
So Guinan.
Guinan, who, again, we saw at the beginning, was also rescued from that. Like,
a great
Nexus
scene
event.
That furthers my fan theory that they did just forget to pay the electricity bills. So they go to Guinan's room, and it is just
a ton
all,
of candles.
It's all, there's no lights, it's all just candle lights. She's just lit a bunch of candles.
And that is, that and 10 Forward are the only instances where you'd be like, sure, yeah, this makes sense. Like, oh, yeah, Guinan's cool and, you know, witchy and, like, she'd probably have a bunch of candles lit. But also, come on.
So Picard is like, Guinan, tell me what the Nexus is. And Guinan's like, okay, so it's basically heroin. Like, it's sort of like you go into a place that is just, everything feels great, you're comforted, and it's magical and...
Once, time doesn't exist.
Time doesn't exist, and once you go there, you're just going to be sad that you're never back. Like, and you'd best just forget about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I had the note from a little later, and this is pre-Matrix, but the Nexus is the Matrix. It's not real, but it feels realer than real, and it's so good you'd rather die than leave it. Like, okay, sure, fine.
This is, well, and speaking of time doesn't exist, this leads me to a question. So... basically, the Enterprise find out that Sauron is in cahoots with the two Duras sisters, the Klingons from the show, who tried to overthrow
Klingons.
The Empire with a puppet, you know, leader, and they ended up getting defeated, and that's kind of their origin in the show. They blow up the star. Picard fails. The ship crashes like the in a really stupid way. Basically,
how does the ship crash? I didn't understand.
I was half paying attention.
How this
well,
movie's so convoluted. Like
it's
I know
because Troy was driving the ship. Let's put
we
the counselor on board of driving
drive.
The ship. No, yes. It's not that
we
she's
how
a counselor.
Women are.
It makes no sense. Riker is supposed to be one of the best pilots
Riker
in
fucking
Federation.
Starts episode one being like, I'm a good pilot.
I'm gonna
that's like his one
ship.
Thing. as he's a good pilot.
Yeah, it's like his one thing in the pilot, but he's like, I'll stay here. Who else? Worf, he could probably do it. Data definitely could do it. Troy, do you're here. Why don't you do it?
What I'm hearing, this is not Troy's fault. This is Riker's fault. As commander, yes. He made that decision.
He did make
Troy's
the call.
Just carrying out an order.
Troy's just trying to stay alive.
I mean, poor
Their
Troy.
Fucking
she
ex or whatever is like,
yeah, drive this.
She literally just got, she just went through the training like a season or two ago, just, you know, to get the blue outfit or whatever. You know what I mean? This is a lot to put on her shoulders.
She's also helping their captain through grief. She's focused on other shit. Okay.
Exactly. Pilot the ship during a like, we're about to die. Troy, you get on the console. I was like, what?
This reminds me, Riker's leadership reminds me a lot of Captain Cameron's.
Yes.
You do it.
Someone else.
So why this movie's okay. So convoluted? Like,
well, while Soren is on this space station before the Klingons come and get him, basically Data and Geordi are there to just investigate what's going on with hey, there's some weird.
Data has his Cronenberg moment.
Yes, they're picking up some weird shit on the space station where Soren has his stuff. And basically, Soren kidnaps Geordi. He uses his visor to basically implant like a webcam mm-hmm. or whatever that the Klingons use.
He puts a GoPro on Geordi.
He puts a GoPro on Geordi. Then they send him back as a prisoner exchange. They're like, okay, well, Soren's on the surface Enterprise. Like, we'll exchange Picard for Soren, and Picard can go back to the planet where Soren is and chat. We'll give you back Geordi. So Geordi's walking around in engineering with his GoPro, his hidden GoPro. Mm-hmm. And this allows the Klingons to see the shield module. Modulation of the Enterprise. It's actually their Wi-Fi password.
They see
their Wi-Fi password.
Okay.
All
we were putting it in wrong, man. You got to put an exclamation point at the end. Yeah.
And it allows capital them to
capital B. Yeah.
It allows them to shoot through their shields and just and basically just cripple the Enterprise. And
password, by the way, is broccoli sucks 420.
The reason why the ship has to detach is because there's a warp core breach in progress. That's why they have to detach and fly the saucer off.
Sure.
But again, it makes no sense why Riker, one of the best pilots in the Federation, gives the ship flying duties to Troy for some reason, the ship counselor. And now I just want to reiterate, this is not because she's female. That has nothing
I
to do
know,
with it.
I was making a
Her
joke.
Job duty does not include driving
she
the flagship of the Enterprise.
No one should have asked her to do this. This is way above what she has trained
yes.
for.
Exactly. It makes no sense. I mean, Worf's standing there. Data is there. You put the person with the least amount of experience on... you know, we're in this emergency situation. We're going to crash. Let's give it to the person who has never flown before.
and that does get us to another very cringy scene, I think, of the ship crashing, where you have, like, just the crew members, like, holding on Data's, like, because he has the emotion chip, is like, oh, no. Shit.
He curses, which you can only do if you have emotions.
Yes.
That's a
PG-13 rating.
And a PG-13.
Him yelling, oh shit, was like, it felt like I was watching a Roland Emmerich movie.
Yes. Kind. Yes.
Yeah. Oh shit.
Like you said, it felt like someone who had never seen Star Trek and was just sort of aware of it through osmosis making a Star Trek
They're
movie.
Like, and what
even
if
though,
the android
ironically,
says a curse word?
Even though, ironically, it was written and directed by people who worked on the show.
So well, and that's like, the thing. Like, that kind of, like, nugget of an idea, it'd be like, oh, that'd be, like, a funny, you know, couple minutes on an episode of the show to be like, someone teaches Data swear words. And he just, I don't know, maybe they're, like, aliens, you know, bullshit. But then he says, like, ass, and people are like, what, Data? And it's like, yeah, that'd be funny for, like, a couple minutes on a show, yeah. On an hour-long show.
Right.
Like, this whole idea of this movie would have been fine as an episode of the show. Like, Picard loses someone in the family, and then
has
this whole thing
with
the
that.
Nexus.
Yeah.
This whole thing with the Nexus happens, and then he realizes, like, oh, this isn't real, you know, that kind of thing. And he
I
has
have
to give
move
that
on.
Up. Like,
I have to live with my grief, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. This would have been a fine, an okay episode of the show. But as a movie, it just, it doesn't work. It doesn't, no.
So,
which is why they implant this scene, I feel, of the ship crashing to up the stakes a bit. And at the time in 1994, I gotta say, on the big screen, it looked and sounded amazing. But
I bet it
as
did.
someone now who's going through and watching the show again, like, it just seemed like such a disappointing ending to that ship. That ship that is you know, gone through 7 seasons of the show, gone through so much, gone against time, as Riker puts it later.
Crashes
in the movie.
Into the dirt.
It just crashes into the dirt, and you know, it just
piloted
it
by someone with no training.
Piloted by poor Troy.
Commanded by Riker.
The disrespect.
I mean, it hey, just, I will note, as you know, I've. This whole Trek cast began from my hatred of Riker. How long was he in command of the ship before it blew up?
Well,
not long at
not
all.
Not long at all.
But it's just I feel like if you're gonna destroy the you know the Enterprise
the
D,
ship
the ship which has been such a character unto itself in this show, like shouldn't Picard at least be on the bridge when this is happening?
I know it's like if you're gonna do something as like symbolic as that, shouldn't it be for something?
The whole tone like should be like kind of like touching and like moving and stuff instead of just like
Star
Trek 3.
Oh shit!
I feel like this is so weird. Like ever since Star Trek 3, where they first did this and it was handled with such grace, and you know, and it has that moment where Kirk is the one that makes the decision, like I'm going to blow up the Enterprise in order to get us out of here, and you see the Enterprise fall into the atmosphere,
and
it's this really poignant
moment.
And 3
is Search for Spock, right? Like that's the whole fucking we're doing. Like I would make this kind of sacrifice of this thing
exactly.
that I love so much to save this other person I love so much.
I've said this before. He responds to the destruction of the Enterprise in the same emotional capacity as the death of his son, if not more. Like that ship was basically his kid. Like he spent the entire first movie, you know, like just idolizing the Enterprise. Like God, I want to get back on that ship. Like I love it so much. Yeah, that made that, you know, and we don't get that at all in this with Picard, because again, throughout the show, Picard has the same feelings about the Enterprise that Kirk did about his. Like, you know, he there are moments in the show when there's a moment in an episode called what's the episode? It's the episode Spaceship Mine or something like that. It's basically Die Hard on the Enterprise.
Sure.
Like the crew is off the ship and they're performing like an energy sweep or something and the ship's empty. And he finds out there's some people on the ship that are trying to steal this like element or something. Anyway, but there's a moment when everyone's off the bridge of the ship and it's just Picard and he just sort of like walks around the ship and he sort of just kind of like, you know, like brushes his hand on the consoles and just sort of looking around like, I love this ship. You know what I mean? Like the ship is, you know.
Cut to like when this one's like destroyed and he shows up to like the aftermath. He's just like kicking around the rubble.
He's like, where's my scrapbook?
Exactly.
Like picks up the, I mean, like whatever. This is maybe a nitpick, but like there's a moment where he picks up like what was introduced
one
in
of his
an episode
artifacts.
As like.
Wait, does that happen in this one, or is that a...
No, that's this one. He picks up a thing that's, like, from the show where there's, like, the episode starts with him being like, do you know what this is? Like, there's only, like, a couple of these in the entire universe.
And now he's like,
universe.
Where's my
this
fucking
priceless...
scrapbook?
Yeah, he, like, picks it up and, like, tosses it across his shoulder, and then, like, oh, the scrapbook. There we go.
Thank
all right,
goodness.
See you later, dusty old Enterprise.
All these pictures that I printed out and glued onto paper.
It's wild. You don't have that. This should be the moment where Picard, before he transports up with Riker, and he's just sort of walking around the bridge and just like, oh man,
surveying
like
the damage and like
exactly, just like grimace. But no, he's just like smiling, like, hey, you know, I got a feeling this won't be the last Enterprise. You know what I mean? Just his attitude is completely
I'm gonna take a
wrong.
Dump in the room down real quick. God. Pissing
well,
on the
exactly.
grave of the Enterprise.
Before that happens, we do get the. I guess iconic. I'm so unexcited for this movie, but when Picard and Kirk do finally meet up, although first we have Picard in the Nexus, and we kind of see what being inside of that like.
So how does
he
get in the Nexus? So okay,
I don't know.
So Picard is on the planet, the Wile E. Coyote planet.
He's like throwing rocks.
It's so dumb and like
to like test the.
You could cut like 20 minutes of this. It's just like Picard looking at Malcolm McDowell like deviously setting up
he's typing
his little rocket. And Picard's just, like, throwing rocks at him, and then eventually he's in the Nexus
and
somehow.
And he gets up in the Nexus, and first of all, this is another note of mine, every time they say Nexus, is that literally a brand of shampoo, or does it just sound like it? Because that's, every time they say it with so much seriousness, I'm like, and I guess that's true for a lot of sci-fi shit, but I'm like, You're talking about shampoo. You're talking about a conditioner here. I don't care.
In the first draft, the Nexus was known as Pantene Pro-V.
Someone Googled something and they're like, "Ah, oh, fuck, we gotta change it, guys."
It's taken. It's some shampoo. Got it.
Damn it.
All right, let's go to Herbal Essence.
Can we talk about Picard's idea of bliss?
Which is
basically a Victorian era.
It's Victorian
family
Christmas,
at Christmas
time. Yeah, this is again where
this is what Picard would want.
It feels like a misunderstanding.
He hates kids.
Of Picard the character, and I don't know. I'm not opposed to
it is a Charles Dickens.
He
scene.
Just fucking yes! loves Charles Dickens, and that's really about it. It's not the kids. No, but that again, we see Picard over the course of the series, like. You know, he warms up in many ways. He loosens up. He goes from being like, please do not let a child look at me to like, no, I can hang. It's like, I get it. I understand. You know, I was a child once and I have to remember that too. And even if I find them annoying, like, it's fine. But I don't, and you know, people's priorities change, but I don't buy that his, you know, greatest I never want to leave this fantasy is he's got like six fucking kids. And it's Christmas time.
I feel like Picard's fantasy would be just him on the bridge of the Enterprise
again.
Yeah,
I was just gonna say that, like him on the bridge of the Enterprise, with, like something.
Well,
like,
it's like,
like they're about to like go to like an archaeological site or something.
The one moment from his Nexus sequence where you know, all the kids are like, "Papa, will you light the fire with us?" But the one part that it, you know, feels meaningful is when he sees his nephew, who he had learned earlier that he learned that his brother and sister-in-law and his nephew died in a fire, and the nephew is like, you know, 12 years old or something like that. And
the nephew who we've seen on the Trek cast playing younger version of Picard,
good old Rene Rip. But that one moment of him being like, oh, like let's read a book together, uncle. And it's like, yeah, okay, Picard in his grief would sure see this in this fantasy of like, my family's alive and I actually get to, you know, spend time with them. Because that's the other thing that this movie sets up of, again, like, you make time for family or you don't. And that, sure, he might have some regrets about, like, I should have made more time for the family that I had when I had it. But again, it's just like, I don't, the rest of it just feels like, I don't want to say, like, schmaltzy, but,
Like, for Kirk, not for Kirk either. Because, again, Kirk is just, like... Neither of their fantasies makes sense for each of them, I feel. Like, maybe for Kirk, you know, he's a ladies' man or whatever. Maybe he would have a regret of not getting back with, like,
the one that got away or whatever.
The one that got away or whatever. But again, I feel like, much like Picard in this sense, Kirk is, like, he loves, like, again, like, the whole first movie, he's like, I want to be back on the Enterprise. I wish I was captain again and an admiral.
I feel like that's something that... We've touched on these characters many, many times of, like, for all that Kirk and Picard are very different characters, it's like they are both captains in space because that's where
they
as people need to be and, like, love being there and being on Earth, you know, chopping wood or having a Christmas dinner is, like, you know, there's always going to be a part of them that's like, no, I have to be... somewhere else. I can't stay.
Well,
here.
In fact, it's almost like there's some deleted scenes that I feel kind of like undermine his whole Kirk's whole fantasy. Like when we see him later chopping wood and all that other stuff. Like the opening of this movie was supposed to be William Shatner skydiving. It's him skydiving because he's not a captain anymore.
And
he needs
the thrill.
And he needs the thrill. And that's what he does. He does these crazy death-defying things. Like, we see him climbing that mountain in part 5.
He's climbing the mountain freehand because he's a fucking crazy guy who needs to have a thrill. Yeah.
And that's how the movie was supposed to open. And in fact, this scene was
shot. When you're in your mid-80s, chopping wood is a bit of a thrill.
But it's just, it's basically just him wanting a thrill. And then they're like, oh, they're stepping the Enterprise B out. They want us to come out. It's like, all right. But, like, again, it gets back to, I feel, the mischaracterization of both these characters, to a more so with Picard than Kirk, I think. But again, I think Kirk would have been the same way. He would have been like, no, I just want to, he would be on the Enterprise. In fact, again, If anything, it makes a little more sense with Picard going through this, who has just gone through this trauma, you know, and thinking about child and a path not taken and that stuff. But with Kirk, it doesn't make sense. He is literally, from his perspective, 5 minutes earlier, he was about to sit in the chair. He's like, oh, I'm back. Because Cameron initially is mm-hmm. like, I'll go do it. I'll fix the thing. Mm-hmm. And Kirk sits in the chair and he's just like, he has that look on his face like, oh, I'm back, baby. But then he's like, no, you got to be on your
ship.
Yeah,
no, it's so your time, Kirk's, not mine.
Yeah. From Kirk's perspective, like, if he was in the Nexus, you would think he would be like wanting to relive the good old days on the ship.
He doesn't even have Spock.
Like, yeah, right?
Oh,
how are you gonna show me? I know Nimoy would
do it. I know
like,
Nimoy
no,
wouldn't do
you.
It, but we don't see the woman either. You don't have to show Spock.
Exactly.
But like,
there should be some echo of like, hey, remember that most important relationship that we spent multiple movies?
There's not even like a reference to him, and like that's like
it just yeah, it feels empty. That,
well, I'll tell you the reason why. And this gets back to what I mentioned at the top of the podcast, where there seems to be a theme with much of the trivia of this movie.
Oh.
And that theme is characters from the old show or actors from the old show looking at the script and saying, this is dog shit, I'm not going to do it. The chief
they
of
said,
which
no,
is,
thank you.
As you mentioned, Spock, Leonard Nimoy. He read the script and he was just like, no, like, this is terrible. Like, I don't even have to be in this movie. Like, these lines could be spoken by anyone.
Yeah.
So they gave those lines to Scotty.
Aww.
And apparently, Nimoy, this is on the Chattopedia, ChadDB, Nimoy said this afterward as proof that he was right. He's like, see, fucking Scotty had what would have been Spock's lines, and it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, no, and I get that. It's just, like, it's such a bummer. It's, again, it's like, you know, a misunderstanding of these wonderful characters and again the decades of pre-established like stories that we've had about them that like Kirk's life has in part revolved around Spock and okay I guess in his fantasy of fantasies he's just making eggs on Earth sure.
With some, well, this is interesting. The woman, Antonia, that was supposed to be Carol Marcus originally.
Mm.
Which
who is
would have been kind of interesting.
The mother of his
of
son?
His son
who dies in three. Because Carol's was she alive? The character, or did she also die in the movie?
No, the character I think would have been alive.
Okay.
But, well, we don't see her again
yeah,
after
sure,
part
yeah.
two, but for Kirk's perspective, that could have been a case where he could have gone in a different direction.
Sure,
they touched on that a little in part two.
Again, where it's like, yeah, we've looked at this before of Kirk, you know, thinking about like what might have been if I had made this choice or that choice and, you know, been in my son's life or that. And then it's like, well, you know, you didn't. And that's how it shook out. And yeah, it's.
Well, then it gets
fascinating.
Oh, go
well,
ahead.
I was gonna say, it's fascinating because this doesn't end with Spock. Like, it was also going to check off. It was supposed to be Kirk, Spock, and McCoy.
Oh.
And this is an insult. This is very insulting. With Sulu back on the Khan for some reason. And when they asked George Takei to come back to play Sulu, he's like, wait a minute. You had me at the helm of the Enterprise? Like, wasn't I just made captain in the last movie? This is pretty disrespectful. So they're like, all right, well, it's his daughter then. It's I don't know. Again, I think it just gets into the mischaracterizations and just mm-hmm. like just getting off on the wrong foot with this movie. Like I feel like they made all the wrong choices here.
Yeah. 100%. You're just not it's I don't know what they're doing, but they're like trying to please people who like aren't fans of the show in the first place, and so it's just like not making any sense, and it's certainly not like a good entry point. If the idea is like, oh, you don't have to know anything about Star Trek, you could just watch this. Like, no,
absolutely not.
This is all. I love Star Trek, and I'm pretty familiar with it, and I'm like having a hard time following a lot of this plot.
I think the only time the Next Generation movies pulled this off, this idea of wanting to bring in a bigger audience that maybe hadn't seen Star Trek, is in the next movie, First Contact. Now, that is not a perfect movie by any means, but I think it does a better job of basically placating to that action crowd. And in that sense, I think it works in that sense. Like,
well, before
it is,
we get to that, we have to wrap up this movie.
We got to wrap up Generations. We got to do our homework.
Before we do, I wanted to say one last thing about Picard's like Nexus fantasy and just imagine if it was a fantasy, yeah, of him on the Enterprise doing what he loves, and then he like walks into his ready room, and there's his brother and nephew, and it gets to be that kind of like, I always wanted to bring you a, you know, show you this, and you know, we get to see like the nephew like excited about X, Y, and Z, and then that's where we get the, you know, reveal of like, no, you're in a fantasy, you're, this isn't real, et cetera, et cetera. But it's not. Anyway, Merry Christmas, Charles Dickens.
So they,
like,
they
always like TV Picard would have had like an extended monologue with Shatner explaining like why this isn't real, why this sucks, and why he needs to come back with them. You know what I mean?
And we don't get that.
We don't get. Well, I don't know. Like we get a thing that where Shatner like jumps over this cliff or something with his horse, and then he realizes, oh, I'm not scared when I always used to be when I did that. I'm not scared because it's not real. Like. I just it would have been great to see Picard give him a speech and show Kirk how Picard is good in his sense, how he commands. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
I don't know. I think you're right. I think it's a mistake to bring Kirk back to the back to the future to fight Soran in a fist fight. It's just like it's just
yeah.
Stupid.
And then
yeah, so that's what happens. We
the
get
results.
We get the incredible action lineup of. Middle-aged Malcolm McDowell.
Yeah, three middle-aged men.
Jean-Luc Picard and William Shatner, circa 94.
The actor Jean-Luc Picard.
The actor Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
This fight scene is amazingly bad. It's just
even
like,
by
you know,
Star Trek standards, it's bad.
Yes.
Yeah. It's
and just, we mentioned before that McDowell in this movie is looking pretty good. And he's fighting these two elderly men, and just like, especially in Kirk's case, he is way over the hill, but I love it because the movie is just like, oh well, Kirk's the badass, so naturally he's the one that gets some punches in and does more damage than Picard did. It's just like, again, it gets back to what you were saying, Jackie, of the age old argument, like, who's the better captain, Kirk or Picard?
What
the way this is cut,
each other,
the way this is cut too, you can totally just imagine like, okay, take a swing, and then you just I just imagine like them like keeling over like
one well, or both gets into a like heavy coughing fit.
McDowell's probably
can
just
we get
like,
some water
right,
on the set?
Well, I'm gonna go over here and work out again and get my veins really pulsating.
I know, yeah.
You know,
now they'll give 80-year-old Patrick Stewart some fucking like human growth hormone and be like, get back in there, champ.
Well, I mean, Picard is in all fairness to Patrick Stewart, he is far younger than Kirk in this, and honestly, like when you see him in the next movie, spoiler, I mean, he's rocking some pretty nice arms, man. He's looking pretty good.
He sure is. Not that I again support action Picard characterization. I'm not. Mad at Picard having, you know,
but he is rocking some nice
guns. Not every action star has to be young too. It's just like these people don't look like they're in fighting shape, I'll say.
we were like the whole time during that fight scene being like, oh, are we gonna get the classic double fisted punch over the back?
We kind of do a little bit.
Oh, yeah, almost.
this fight scene, as bad as it is, this climax, does have my favorite moment of the movie.
Kirk, when they kill Kirk.
Yes. And
when
they
he gets
kill
killed
Kirk
by a bridge.
They kill him in spectacular fashion. Again, I feel
the
like
most
I've said
disrespectful
this in the past.
Death.
Well, it's amazing. This bridge that Kirk is on collapses, and he flies. He flies through the air. He somersaults through the air while still holding onto the bridge. You see this bridge go.
This
whoosh.
Rickety ass fucking.
He flies like 100 feet, and it is the it is the funniest death ever.
It reminds me. It's almost the scene from Grabbers where they like.
Yes. Yes.
I wish that had been Kirk's death. They just fling him and they don't
fling
go to him again. And instead of being like, then we go to him, he's on the ground, he's covered in rocks, and there's a little trickle of fake blood out of his mouth. He's just like, live long and pro. Oh, never
God,
mind.
When we see him after this horrific death where he's holding
on
his bridge and he careens through the air, he has a tiny little ketchup blood
trickle.
A tasteful little smear.
His brains would be over there. His arms would be over there.
Yeah,
his legs.
It'd be like that scene of Saving Private Ryan where the guy is trying to put his own intestines back into his.
Yes, yeah, that would be Kirk in this moment.
I dare you, Star Trek Generations. I fucking dare you. No, but then Picard respectfully covers his corpse with rocks and is like,
yeah, I love that he doesn't like beam his body back for like a burial. It's just like, well, you're buried on the Wiley Coyote planet. Yes.
Meep meep.
Oh God! Like this, yeah. His remains would have been beamed up for sure. Well, I guess you know, like, did he even tell anybody about this?
Yeah, right? Because oh yeah, like, I did run into you know, Admiral Kirk. He's been missing for 80 years.
One of the most famous captains in Starfleet history. No big deal.
Oh yeah, I saw him. We had a chat. We fought a sexy old guy.
He would be, yeah, he would, at the very least, he'd be like, let's show the body, let's show him some respect, we'll put him back on Earth or something, like, near his farm.
Yeah, maybe they'll come back and beam him back up later.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe they did, but I don't get that sense. They just leave. We see at the end, there's like two or three starships that come and pick him up. They didn't have room for one corpse.
Yeah. Does Malcolm McDowell also die during this scene? I don't remember. I have my notes after it goes straight from finally Kirk is back, just chopping wood in the Nexus. Note is anyway they kill Malcolm McDowell.
Well, it's really fitting giving this Looney Tunes planet because Picard like does like a hack on the missile and when Soren goes up there, he's like, oh shit, it's on like a destructor or something, and then he holds up a little sign that says EEP and then he blows up. Like that's the end of Soren.
It blows up the missile that's like supposed to destroy a star. It does blow up, and it's like one stick of dynamite.
It's tiny. Yes.
It's one stick of dynamite, and then Soren looks down at his feet where there's no longer any earth that he's standing on, and then he looks right at the camera, and he shrugs, and he falls.
It's ridiculous. You would think a missile that had the capability to destroy a star would do a little more than a stick of dynamite.
Yeah, you'd have to like shoot it. You'd have to shoot it, but just like shoot it somewhere else, and it blows up harmlessly in space. Not just like let's just blow it up here. Like I would assume the planet is like destroyed now.
Yeah,
it's gonna blow up a star, which is bigger than a planet
by a lot. Anyway,
like stars are pretty big. If I know anything about space,
stars are famously huge.
I mean, I don't know, in all fairness, if any stars are left out in the wastes, but from what I remember of the sun, it was big.
The sun is, what are you talking about? The sun is still around.
I just know there's the big light in the sky, and sometimes it's there, and sometimes it's not. So is that a sun? I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm not a scientist.
I know there's a light in the waste, Dave, but I don't know if that's our sun.
Oh, good point. Maybe it's something else. Yeah. Well,
sometimes point. It's on. Sometimes it's not. Whatever. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Well, so
I do think if I shot a rocket to blow it up, though, it would take more than like a couple seconds.
Right? Yeah. It's a rocket. Like,
it
that
is
would
so Wile E. Coyote.
Time.
Like, I cannot stress it enough. It's kind of like, it doesn't have to be like hard sci-fi, but it's it is straining.
It's I'm sure the same could be said for any number of episodes of the show, and that's fine. It's we're just here to have fun, but it's especially silly when it's in the context of like, no, here's our super serious action movie.
Yeah.
It doesn't work as an action movie because the action in it is so lame.
Yeah.
Like, again, I feel like this will be improved upon in the next movie. I feel like you could accept that movie on those terms.
JJ did it all right. I mean, the action of those movies.
Well, if,
like,
it depends.
For
you
really
got to lean into
like,
that.
The action.
You really
was
gotta lean into that action. Otherwise, you get like a middle ground like this, and just it, like you said, it services no one.
I agree with that. I still am of the opinion that leaning too far towards action in any kind of Star Trek is a mistake because it's a show for quiet nerds. Okay, it's not about punching and shooting, and when it is, it's done in the most like stage combat ass way of like 4 feet between everybody. And I just get so tired by the more modern Treks.
I feel you. I guess what I'm saying is like they at least do the action well, even if it's a wrong step for Star Trek. They at least do it well in the next movie and the JJ movies.
It can even be choreographed a lot better than it is.
Yeah, and it definitely is in the next movie. Again, like for all its faults, I really enjoy First Contact. Have you guys not seen that?
I haven't seen any of the generation.
Although maybe if and when we watch it, I'll have a similar moment of like, oh no, I watched this on TV, you know, 12 years ago. I wasn't paying attention.
While my dad was watching this on TNT.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think First Contact handles the action a lot better, even though there's still some, I think, some issues with the characterization of some of the characters, particularly Picard. They at least do the action well in that movie. This is a little preview of what's to come when we complete our next leg of our Next Generation journey. Yeah. But unless you guys have any other thoughts, what do you think, Captain? Should we wrap this one up?
I have one final note. It's the most important thing that happens in the movie. Spot does live. when we are going through the wreck of the Enterprise.
One life sign, it's very faint. That was.
And then Data pulls out a Spot, and he's all, you know, scruffy and dirty, but he found a place to hide. And then, so that's my two last notes, which were all caps, Spot lives. And then, what liquid is Data crying? Because it's a very creepy yellow goo.
It looks like pee.
it's gross. And in otherwise,
it looks like pee.
Well,
Dave,
you've been drinking too much LiveWire. Too much LiveWire. But yeah, I'm always grateful for Spot content and especially Data loving his pet cat content.
Yeah, that was good. I want to release the Spot cut. I would rather see.
What was Spot up to that entire time?
I want Spot to go to the Nexus.
Yes.
It's just like a field of Datas.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, a bunch of Datas who are petting him and pick him up and then put him back down. That's my ideal Star Trek movie. And there's no action and it's all cats. Anyway.
Yeah. All right. So thanks, crew.
Captain, what about recommendations?
Well, that's what I was getting to, Ensign Snyder.
Sorry, Jesus. You know how the captain is so macho and angry.
Backseat captaining over
here. Oh, I've learned from Picard from this movie.
You should yell at people and be short with them.
Bury your feelings, crew. what? So I was going to start with Ensign Snyder, but now you've been demoted even lower. So I'll start with Jackie. Jackie, our representative from the Vent Colony.
I am an ambassador, yeah.
Ambassador from the air vents of the store. Thank you for coming down, by the way.
Of course.
Always a pleasure to see your delegation. How do you think about this movie? Would you recommend Star Trek Generations to the people of the Wastes?
Well, I don't think highly of this movie. I don't think I would recommend it because, as we've said, it's not very enjoyable if you like Star Trek, and I don't imagine it's very enjoyable if you don't like Star Trek or are unfamiliar with it. But luckily, there are hundreds and hundreds of hours of various Star Trek television programs that will help you out and show you some nice and interesting people traveling through space. And that's that. And also, Malcolm McDowell is hot.
Thank you for those thoughts, Jackie. Now to our lowly crew member.
What was like Wesley's? He was like not even acting ensign. that's
guy on the ship.
To our stowaway Snyder. Before I eject you out into space, what are your thoughts on Star Trek Generations?
Before we do that, Mike, I just want to say that I am still technically the captain and I have the codes of the ship, so you can't do that. and I am about to reinstate my captain codes into
this
computer.
You are not
going
to like what his report looks like.
But no, my thoughts on this movie have evolved since I was a kid. When I saw this in 1994 as I think like a 7 or 8 year old, I loved it. It was Star Trek on the big screen. It was the next gen crew. That awesome at the time ship crashing thing. It was so cool. Now I think the allure of seeing my favorite Star Trek crew on the big screen has faded, and it is now just, you know, because having watched the show and being a fan of the show, like my appreciation of the show has grown over the years even more than it was. And seeing the mischaracterizations of my favorite characters in this movie really, really dampens my enjoyment of it. And again, to the... you know, it was cool to see the Enterprise crash in 94 when CGI was a new thing, but now it just feels like such an unceremonious end to what was such an important part of that show, that ship. And I can't recommend, I think Jackie's right, I can't recommend it to fans of Star Trek or non-fans who are just sort of familiar with it. I don't think it would please either crowd. That's a firm not recommend for me, Captain.
Thank you for that.
Acting Captain. Now I shall just put my codes back into the computer. Authorize Snyder codes alpha beta 1.
Well, I is my last command as captain of this video store. I have to let everyone in the waste know that this is not a movie you should watch. This is a classic example of trying to please someone who would never have liked this in the first place. And you end up just pleasing nobody. I mentioned earlier, this reminds me of, you know, back when there was a U.S. government, of like when Democrats would try to like change things to get Republicans to vote. It's like, what are you doing? Now no one wants this. This is like,
you look fucking stupid.
This is truly like the Democrat bill of movies. it's just like, it's a mess. Like it's also like not only is it like a mischaracterization, but the characterizations they go with are just boring, and the plot is, and the pacing of this movie, the worst thing for me is the pacing of this movie. It just like, it can't get out of the starport. It's just like lurching and leering and turning left and right, and eventually literally crash lands, piloted by someone who shouldn't be piloting the ship.
Oh, that is such an apt description of this movie.
So, poor Troy. Yeah. Really gets the shortest end.
It's not Troy's fault. It's not Troy's fault.
Yeah, I mean, she was just following the orders of her superior officer. Yeah.
Yeah. The true.
Although I guess that is the connective tissue from the show to this is that they really just don't know how to give Troy an interesting storyline. Huh?
They do. The one thing this show gets right, or this movie gets right, is the characterization of Riker is terrible.
And what a way to end our first leg of the Trekcast, right where we started with Mike's distrust of Riker. It's
not
really
changed.
Fitting. It's really fitting. Maybe we'll see that change when we get to the more quote unquote boss fights with First Contact and Insurrection and Nemesis. But I kind of find it doubtful. But
no, he gets way better.
But you know, I love it. It's great. The show, this sideshow started off. I don't mean that in a bad way. This sideshow. This that's not one word. That's two words. This spinoff, I should say, started with Reich's hatred of Riker, and it ended up, you know, basically that was a self-fulfilling prophecy. But I think we found something more with this spinoff show beyond Riker is a bad officer. I think it sounds like we reignited a love of Trek inside Mike. Mike, you said that you'd actually watched Trek before we started this whole journey, right?
Yeah, and it has. I do. It has reignited a love of Trek for me. So I'm excited to take another leg around. This movie aside.
All right. Well, I forget whose pick it is for. Oh, you picked. I think you picked Sub Rosa, right, for season 7, Mike.
I did.
And this was, I guess, technically this was my pick I put forth that mandate. Like, I think, when we finish season 7, we should do a movie. So I think, Jackie, it goes to you now. We're going back to season 1 of Next Generation.
Ooh. I will. I'll go through the files, and I'll try to find something.
I think we have a couple season 1 DVD collections in the store.
Oh well, I use paper files. It's printouts of. Each script from each episode. That's how I enjoy them. Anyway, I'll make sure to find something suitably season 1 stupid. That's my promise. That's my promise to you.
I can't wait. Well, we will be back. The Trek cast will return. Acting Captain Mike, will you do the honors?
Oh, geez. How do we end these shows?
I don't know. Do you have like a bottle of champagne you can throw?
I was hinting at you saying something like, take us out or something like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
If you do have champagne, then that works.
Take us out.
Mike, you brought a tear to my eye.
Captain's Log Supplemental. Despite some backtalk to his superior officer, I am pleased to report that Ensign Michael performed his duties admirably on his first assignment as acting captain of the Trek cast. I have high hopes that he continues his show of promise as a leader as we enter the second leg of our long journey. Because if he slips up, I know a resourceful air vent dweller named Jackie who is ready to pounce on the position. End of log.